Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I'd like to have a little bit of a discussion about the choices that we have coming up in this election. I think there's been a lot of drama that's gone on in the last several weeks, and some things have come to light about what to expect. I think if we can cut through all of the rhetoric and the, I guess it's techniques to make people completely ignore what's really going on, ignite their emotions so that they stop critically thinking. If we can cut through all of that and really see what's going on in terms of our choices in our health care and the direction that the country should go, then I think we can make some conscious choices this coming election season. If you look at the statistics that's been, or the polls that have come online for the past several years, they've been pretty much the same thing, that we're on the wrong track. It's since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, there has been an unfolding of reality about what it really means to carry in health insurance in our country. And does that really translate into access? And does it translate into excellent medical care? Every week on the show, we break down what's really going on in the healthcare system from the front line. And I've been speaking about this for years, about how I thought that the Obamacare regulations were designed to be a disaster, were designed to create chaos so that single payer could be brought in down the road. And this past week, Bill Clinton on the campaign trail, and Hillary Clinton for that matter, have finally spoken out about what their vision is for our healthcare system, and it is exactly that. It's not just single payer. It's Medicaid and Medicare for all. Now, let's talk about those systems, because they make it sound awesome, that it's affordable, that you can have anything you want, that it's great access, and everybody within these programs are ecstatic to be there. That's not really what's going on at all. I left Medicaid and Medicare about 5 years ago now, and I did it under duress because I had to make a choice about patient care, about whether I wanted to be, and I say this all the time, an agent of the government or an advocate for my patient. That was the stark choices that I had to make. And the second set of choices was, do I stay open, or by taking these programs where I'm constantly, as every physician who's in that system, is fighting daily to get paid for the work that we do. It is an absolute disaster of regulations. It's a maze of playing the game, and it's rigged to fail. You can't win in this system, whether you're a physician or a patient, because there's powers that's greater than both of us. The fact that they can arbitrarily put a doctor out of business because they don't like that they're treating their patients in a manner that's deemed unnecessary, not medically necessary, or in some way is committing some sort of fraud against the government. And it's arbitrary now. It's not that it's real. It's because somebody whistleblows, because the government decides they're paying you too much money. And they always go for the low-hanging fruit, which is the doctor and the patient. Denial of care, or, you know, ginning up some sort of drama about how the doctor is a bad doctor because they want to go the extra mile for their patient. That's the reality of this system. And there's stories out there all over the place of doctors who have been excellent doctors for years, who somehow run afoul of Medicare or Medicaid, and they're put on the hook for fraud. And that fraud can be anything, including underbilling your patient. So you don't charge them what you're allowed to charge them because you want to save them money, or the other side of it is you're not sure what the regulations are. So you decide, okay, I'm not going to charge for this because I don't know if the government's going to come after me. Well, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you underbill, that's fraud. And they can go back and extrapolate that one visit back years, 6 or 7 years, 10 years, and decide that they're going to, you know, pile on that one mistake. Well, if you did it once, you did it this many times over this many years, and then you tack on surcharges and fees, et cetera, and you end up being out of business before you can say boo, before you can blink. And in this system, you're guilty until proven innocent. So they can come and seize your practice, close you down, sell off your assets and your practice, and by the time you go to court and hopefully win your case, you don't have a practice to go back to. That's the system. That's how it's made. You don't get to do what the banks do, where you get to go up to Congress and say, I'm sorry that I cheated hundreds, thousands of customers by opening up fake accounts, and I just get yelled at by Congress. That's not how it works in the healthcare system among doctors. You're guilty. You go to jail. You lose your practice. You have thousands of dollars in fines levied against you. That's the reality. That's not, doctors didn't leave Medicaid and Medicare because they were greedy, because they were making too much money, that they were cutting feet off and taking tonsils out arbitrarily. They left it because they were a fear. They were in fear for their practice, for their freedom. And it was a choice of, do I want to put myself at risk of losing my freedom, losing my practice, losing my livelihood, or jumping out of the system? Which one would you pick? Any critically thinking, any normal human being would definitely choose to opt out of a system that puts them in that position. If this system continues the way it is, and again, let's talk a little bit about the new doc fix. I've mentioned it in the show before, but I don't think it's such an inside baseball kind of thing. People don't really understand what that means. If you're a Medicare patient, for example, and you get admitted to the hospital, if the doctor does not code your admission correctly, whether that's, it's three different, I think it's four different designations, inpatient, observation, ambulatory. I think it's three different designations. If you're not coded with the correct designation, so as a patient admitted to a hospital, if you are admitted as an observation status, your Medicare will not pay for any medication that's given in that hospitalization. Now, you can be admitted with a diabetic complication. Your sugar's too low, too high. You get admitted. You get IV. You get treatment. You get medications. And you can be admitted as an observation, not an inpatient. You stay there 24 hours. Or I think it's less than 48 hours. You can keep that designation. After 48 hours, they have to either discharge you or put you in as an inpatient. Well, this system is now designed to get you stabilized and then get you out the door as fast as possible without telling you anything. So you get stabilized, you get discharged under that observation status. You're going to get hit with a bill for every medication that they gave you in that hospitalization. And trust and believe, it's not going to be cheap. So as a senior citizen, getting hit with a bill for thousands of dollars for a 24-hour visit, or let's say an ER visit, and nobody sees that coming. That's what Medicare means now. Does it mean getting freebies and free medication and treated with the best care, taking as long as it takes to get you better? It's not what Medicare is anymore. It's get you in, get you out, and if possible, stick you with the bill. And the criteria that the government set up for inpatient status is pretty dramatic. It's not just having an exacerbation of your diabetes or high blood pressure anymore. You basically have to be a critical patient, a critically ill patient in an ICU practically, to get an inpatient status. Fortunately, most people who go to the hospital are in that position, which means that this cost shifting the patient is going to go crazed. It's just, and they don't want to readmit you. That's another little pearl. If you get readmitted with the same diagnosis within 30 days, then the hospital won't get paid for that, the hospitalization. So they're under a lot more pressure to discharge you and keep you out of the hospital and manage you as an outpatient, as or a clinic patient, as long and as hard as they possibly can. So the standard of health care in this government-based system has changed. It is not do anything you want. It's not get the standard of care that used to be the standard of care. The scale has changed. The game has changed. And it's, I could call it now medical limbo. How low can you go? How little can you do for the patient? How little medication can you prescribe? How much can you treat the patient as, you know, an observation patient, or I should say an outpatient? And if you can get away with it, put them on telemedicine and remote monitoring. Anything you can do not to use medical resources, not to actually admit them to the hospital, not to take good care of the patient where they, not everybody, you know, can get better in the same amount of time. Not everybody responds to the same medications. Not everybody, it cannot be a one-size-fits-all. And when you fall outside that parameter, where you cost more, where you take longer to get better, where you need more medications, well, good luck to you, because they're not going to do that anymore. And if you have a diagnosis that's a big-ticket item, cancer, for example, or a chronic medical problem that requires you to be hospitalized on a revolving basis, it's just the nature of the disease, chronic lung disease, sickle cell anemia, anything where there is known risks of exacerbation where you can get sick and you have to be hospitalized, well, you're not going to get the same care that you used to get. So when people talk about Medicare for all, Medicaid for all, if in the real world, that means a decrease in your standard of care. That means you're entering the lower tier of a two-tier system. And if we're talking about fairness in this world we live in, the progressive mindset of everybody's equal, everybody's fair, you know, fairness for everybody, this is not an example of a fairness that you want to have applied to you, because that may mean the difference between life and death for people. Seniors are seeing it every day. People on Medicaid have seen this for years, where they've had decreased access to care because very few doctors take it. And if you do have Medicaid, you end up in an ER, or you end up in a clinic where you wait to be treated. This is the socialized system that everybody's talking about, or everybody talks about but doesn't know much about. And on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, I was trying to lay out the government, the cost of government control over your healthcare choices. And that's from a patient perspective, right? So you get admitted with a diagnosis. If the system doesn't work in your favor, you're on the hook for the cost of the service, big time. And in this system, there's no cost control. To talk about how, you know, having a single-payer system will control health, will control cost of health. Looking at it from an economic point of view, there is no cost control in this system. The only things that they've controlled is the payment out to the doctors and, to some degree, to the hospitals. But you really have to understand that there's an absolute disconnect between what hospitals charge and get paid, and what doctors charge and get paid. Now, let's break it down, because there are two types of doctors. We've now moved in a position where three-quarters of the doctors in our country are now salaried employees of hospitals. So they come right up off the top, because they don't control their charges. Their charge master is controlled by the hospital. And I can give you examples of this. Excuse me, where I've had patients who had primary care physicians who they've had for years, loved them, everything was awesome, until that doctor sold their practice to the hospital. Then those patients came back for the same doctor visits and were st- stuck or had sticker shock was the amount of things that were charged to them and things that you wouldn't expect. So if you had an EKG or some sort of in-office procedure, because the doctor's practice had been sold to the hospital, their equipment now belonged to the hospital, and they were charged accordingly. So if that hospital, for whatever reason, was out of network, for example, your doctor was in network, procedures that were done in their office would be charged at a hospital rate or an out-of-network rate. It's like going to the hospital and getting a consult with a specialist, but that specialist is out of your network for some reason. Your insurance won't cover that. The cost of that procedure, that piece of equipment, that consultation comes out of a different pot, which is not cost controlled at all. Two or three or four times what you expect it to be or what it used to be when it was concluded in the visit. So there's these little hit charges that come in that the doctor doesn't control. I don't think the doctors who are on staff at hospitals and have sold their practices even know what the cost that the hospital is charging for the services. So an EKG, which is maybe $15 or not even charged in a doctor's office, becomes a $200 or $300 procedure when you go back to see that doctor after they've sold their practice. So again, this whole healthcare system is doubled down on the most expensive aspects of healthcare. And that means giving the power to the hospital and giving the power to the insurance companies, two entities that are not under any kind of, you know, transparent microscope. Nobody knows what gets charged in a hospital. They don't even know what they're going to charge until after you've had the procedure. For those who have gone for surgery or for any procedure, I challenge you to ask them before you have it how much it is. And they'll invariably tell you they don't know until after you've done the procedure. Sounds a lot like Nancy Pelosi and this, you have to sign it to know what's in it. Ridiculousness. It's fake. It's made up. It's arbitrary. And what they do is they pad their bottom line. That it doesn't make any sense that an EKG, which is once you buy that equipment, you have it. There's no reason to keep charging for the equipment charge. I can understand if it's leased, but hospitals don't lease these things. They own them. So once you've made the capital investment in the doctor's office, everything else becomes profit because you've saved for your bottom line. So there's no reason to keep jacking up prices and changing them based on what the situation is. And all of the regulations that have come down have not come down on that, which is really kind of curious. They don't come down on insurance companies to tell them, hey, you can't cover a procedure in one state but not cover the same procedure in another state. You can't change how much you reimburse somebody in different parts of the same city because they're either on a hospital plan or a member of a hospital versus a private practice. Everything, for a surgery center, pay out more money to a hospital surgery center versus a freestanding surgery center. There is inherent biases and cronyism built into this system. If you are part of the government, friends of the government, you get paid more, you get less transparency, you get to do what you want. And if you're independent, freestanding, whether it's a doctor, a radiology center, a surgery center, you get paid less. And it's actually taking advantage of a system and doubling down on the worst aspects of the system. Why should a system that gives you transparency, efficiency, better quality care, faster service, be reimbursed less than one that is bureaucratic, run by administrators who have no idea what the practice of medicine is like, are only concerned with get them in, get them out, pad the bottom line and make more money? Why should they get the benefit of a system when the system itself is supposed to be cost-cutting, cost-saving? It's completely ridiculous. Cognitive dissonance on steroids. They tell you one thing, something else is happening. When you have this mindset of something's wrong here, you're told, move along, nothing to see here, or you're racist or sexist, and this is how it is. I mean, how long are we going to put up with a system that works like this? Healthcare system is completely broken. I agree with that. It was bad before, but it's worse now. And the whole mindset of the proponents of the Affordable Care Act is to double down on this worst aspect of healthcare reform. They didn't reform the system. They gave the keys to the people driving the train off the track, and they're giving them money, and they're encouraging them to do more of the same thing. That's the sad part. So let's talk about, again, the cost of Medicare and Medicaid. That's the cost to the patient. Let's talk about the cost to the physician. To the physician who gets up every morning, sees a patient, or 20, or 30, or 60 patients a day, wants to do the best they can in the time allotted, usually 7 minutes, who want to use their medical judgment, who are trained to use their medical judgment to take care of their patients in the best way that that individual patient needs. This is what this system now is about. They are now forcing doctors to perform procedures that doctors themselves deem unnecessary or unsafe. Perfect example is HHS just took away doctors' ability to perform procedures that they deem necessary. So if you're an OBGYN and somebody who's a transgender person comes into your office, you are obligated now under HHS rules to perform whatever sex reassignment surgery that they want, hysterectomy, ovariectomy, whatever it is for a gender reassignment, takes the doctor's judgment out of the equation, whether it's a safe procedure, whether it's medically necessary, is no longer in the doctor's purview anymore. We've seen this now in Vermont, where according to the laws in Vermont, I don't know if it's neighbor state, I think California may be trying this as well, if a patient has a catastrophic illness, the doctor, as part of their conversation, must talk about medical-assisted suicide. If it's legal in the state, it must be spoken as an option to the patient. If the doctor has an ethical or moral objection to that, they have to send that patient to a doctor who does not. Again, we have the encroachment of doctor judgment, of Hippocratic oath, morality, and ethics, just completely put on the back burner because of what the state, the government, HHS, decides should be given. What kind of system is that? So as they decide that you have to perform a procedure that you deem unsafe, unnecessary, or if your judgment is it's unethical, you don't have a choice. You have to, by HHS rules, by a signature of regulation, you have to do what you're told. So if you think about this as a slippery slope, what's the next thing that they're going to sign into regulation? That if somebody has a certain percentage chance of living based on their diagnosis, you have to put them in hospice, that you have to perform physician-assisted suicide. Well, I didn't say suicide. It's pulling a plug because they may not even have the option of making a decision with you as a physician. As you say that this is, as you let this go down the path, the pathway down a track that nobody wants to go down is in set in motion. Euthanasia is number one. The next thing is the children who are born with multiple medical problems and someone deciding their quality of life is not worth it. And we know what's best. Let's, you know, stop any medical treatment. Let's just give them, let's just pull out the IV and not feed them. Or another part is when you start getting prenatal care or you do genetics testing and they find out your child has a catastrophic illness based on the testing. Well, now it's going to be forced abortion. This is the system that potentially comes online when the government and when a central authority who controls the purse strings has the power. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
The War State by Michael Swanson is a must-read for anyone interested in the critical 20 years after World War II, when the United States morphed from a constitutional republic to a global imperial superpower. Get The War State by Michael Swanson from Amazon.com today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I don't speak about these topics to alarm people, to make people, to gin up fear. It's about knowledge. These are things that people don't know about. And if they could actually see this or hear about this from a perspective of someone who lives it, as opposed to somebody who's telling you how you should think, and how you should get along, get into the groupthink of the tribe mentality, and just be happy with what you get, then, you know, you can make some conscious decisions. This is not a game, people. If this system comes online, and these are already things that are happening, the things that I described prior to the break are the direction which it will go. This is not conjecture. Ezekiel Emanuel, who wrote Complete Lives, who part of the consortium of bioethicists who set this system up, wrote about this, about restricting care, starting at the age of 55 and beginning at the age, I think, 15. Anybody who falls outside those age parameters should not get access to the standard of health care. They should be rationed health care for these groups, because they're not considered to be productive citizens. You've lived your life. You're on the downswing. You're going to retire. You're not gainfully employed anymore, so you're not paying into the system. So why should you get resources? That's their mindset. It's very, what they think is, pragmatic, which is ghoulish in real life. Who gets to decide who lives and dies? Nobody should do that. It should be your choice, you and your family, and whatever God's will is. That's not a doctor's choice to decide winners and losers, to withhold health care, medicines, treatment to people. And it's not the government's right to tell a government or to tell a doctor what they should do, what standard of care should be, what they deem it is appropriate care. It should never be corporatized. It should never be centralized. By definition, medicine is an individual pursuit where patients and doctors decide together what the best standard of care is, what the choice, given the choices, complete choices, not partial choices. So if you're 80 years old, in good shape, a couple of medical problems, but you're enjoying your life, you're enjoying your family, and you come down with an illness, why should you be not be given the choice of a surgery or a medication because of you falling into a category that that some actuaries decide is, well, this person only has this number of years to live, so they're going to cost the system more. And I see how this is working. They've demonized seniors. And you can see this in the medical training. You can see this in the rhetoric. We're spending all this money in the last few months of life. That money can be spent on something else. Well, good luck. These are the same people, when it comes to them, are going to spend every dime that's available to make themselves better. Why are they more important than you? Why are they more equal than you? Why are we in a position where we're all buying into this divide and conquer strategy? There's abundance in the healthcare system. Before they got their clutches or their hands in it, everybody who needed medical care, whether they were homeless or a millionaire, got the basic level of standard level of care. If you needed a CT scan, you got it. If you needed a surgery, you got it. If you had to be admitted to a hospital, you were. They've created a system, meaning the government, the corporate interests who are running it right now, a system where they get to decide winners and losers, and they get to skim money off the top. You know, most of the healthcare dollar is spent on corporate pursuits, hospital costs, insurance, pharmaceutical costs. That's where the money's going. 7 cents of that dollar is spent on your doctor. The rest is something else. Administrative fees. How much administrative fees do you need to deny somebody care and to throw out a claim and make you resubmit the claim 30 times? You know, I'm up here trying to get a denial appealed, and I'm not even speaking to an ear, nose, and throat doctor. This is after, I don't know, 45 days of, you have to wait 30 days to resubmit your appeal. I finally take it up to another level for the umpteenth time. This is going to be the appeal with my peer, who's an ENT doing the same procedure. I waited, called, finally got the number. The guy calls me back, and I ask him, first off, because I really wanted to know, are you an ear, nose, and throat doctor? And he said no. Like, what kind of appeal is this? If you don't even do the procedure, you're not even in the same specialty as I am. Well, this is just an appeal to deny it based on the rules of the insurance company. You have to actually go up another level to ask for an appeal from a peer. It's laughable. So 6 months later, you've still not paid, and you're still playing a game with the insurance company. This is what the administrative costs are. That doctor is getting paid to take a call from another physician to deny the service based on what the insurance rules are. And the rules are arbitrary. They have no factor basis in what the specialty, National Specialty Association say the standard of care. So if your specialty, whether it's infectious disease, internal medicine, ear, nose, and throat, decide that a procedure or medication is standard of care based on your guidelines, they could care less. They make the guidelines up for themselves, and they're applied arbitrarily. So if I had the same patient and I lived in North Carolina or Florida or Texas, that procedure would be covered because they cover it in those states, but they don't cover it in Georgia. What kind of fairness is that? What kind of system is that? Is the government making any change in that type of denial system? Absolutely not. Do you have recourse to go to the government? I went to my insurance commissioner. This is a plan that is administered by the insurance company. So this is even more fun. The company that owns the policy, that actually farmed it out, who pays for the policy, farmed it out to this major insurance company. So by rights, the business should have the say-so on whether something is covered, not the insurance company, since they're paying for it, their administration of it. But they don't. So you have a renegade insurance system put in place to decide what gets covered, what doesn't, winners and losers, and there's no recourse for it. Nobody's sitting on them. No one can take them to court. Nobody can tell you they're practicing medicine without a license. You're on your own. So imagine a system like that, which is already online. It's more power in the hospital setting, with the HHS rules. This is a system that's set up to to work against you as a doctor and work against you as a patient. Why would anybody want to stay in a system like this? Now, they're in a position with this movement and further rolling out of Obamacare in the next coming years to decide something called value-based medicine. Instead of fee-for-service, instead of paying for what you do for your patient, they're going to roll this out as a single payment system based on the outcome of the patient. Here we go again, right? So a patient has diabetes, high blood pressure. They're not following your guide. You've counseled them to stop going to fast food restaurants and work out five times a week or whatever you're counseling them. And they decide, I'm going to do me. I'm going to eat what I want to eat. And what? And I might take my medicine if I want to. And they come back with a complication. Oh, well, the doctor's fault because they're a bad doctor because he didn't have the right numbers on the return. It's all about numbers now, all about algorithms. No attention to really what's going on the front line, real time. It's population-based medicine, which is standardization on steroids. Everything's on steroids these days. But it doesn't make sense in the real world. So the patient has no responsibility for their actions. It's always the doctor's fault. Well, what you're going to end up getting is doctors who could care less about anything except making the numbers work. And we're talking about human beings here, and we've already seen this. These electronic medical records are supposed to capture information, but the information that's captured is only good as the information that's inputted. So you have, and there's been cases of doctors putting in numbers to make it work, just like they do in the education system to make these test scores go up. You gin the system. You put in false information. The patient doesn't tell you what's going on. They tell you stuff that's not true. You input that, and you have a system that's completely ridiculous. But you're following the guidelines. But is anybody really getting better? And that's what we really need to be asking ourselves. Are people getting healthier? Are people living longer? Is the quality of life of the average patient better? I don't think it is. I think people are spending a lot more money. They're under stress to make their premium payments. They're not going to the doctor because they can't afford out-of-pocket costs. And when they're in there, if they have any sense, they're not saying everything that they do because they know that's going to be going into a database that's shared with every alphabet agency known to man or hackable. So your information's out there. So this is a system that's completely ridiculous. But what it's doing is bringing down a grid of control. So we have patients who may not say everything that they should to the doctor for fear of their privacy being breached. You have doctors not putting in all the information that they can, or information they're putting in is not correct, or they're not interested in getting the patient better because they're interested in making their bottom line so they can keep their quota of patients out of the hospital and, you know, keep their numbers good and keep their admission rate just so the hospital is making as much money as possible. And it's disaster. That's only one aspect of it. That's the practicing side. What about the doctors who are in the administration? The hospital has now become adversarial to the doctors. And those that are in the administration, and there's a great article on this, it's on my Facebook. It's from a physician who works in the hospital setting and has seen a transfer of power from the practicing physician on staff to the hospital administrators. And they're pitting doctors against doctors. Those that are part of the administration are paid differential. That's higher than the average to staff physician. They get bonuses. They're part of the system to keep their foot on the neck of physicians in the hospital so they can keep them in line, make them toe the line. You can't order these tests. You have to get your patient in and out. And if you don't follow these guidelines, you're a disruptive doctor. And there's where the sham peer review part of this comes online, where they have the power of completely damaging your practice by arbitrarily and maliciously, in some instances, ruining your career because you won't play the game. because you have a question about how patients are treated, because you care about readmitting your patient when you should, as opposed to treating them as an outpatient. All these things now are toxic, and they not only affect patient care, they affect physician ability to care for the patient and their morale. And there's a price to pay for this. 400 doctors committing suicide each year is just an example of the price that's being paid. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, the reality that I just painted is, it sounds like it's crazy, I'm sure, to the average person, that this can't possibly be going on. But it is. This is what doctors speak about. I just got back from a conference, and the stories that I heard at the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons conference was just, it's, aside from being just completely outraged that this is happening, it really made me just be more committed to standing in my truth as a physician. Nobody's going to run me out of my practice. Not one of these insurance companies, not the government, not anybody who's telling me what I should and shouldn't do to take care of my patients. Nobody. And as patients learn that the system that they're being promised is never going to happen, maybe you'll decide to start taking control of your health and finding a physician who thinks like I do. I'm certainly not alone. Now, the greatest part of this conference is that I'm not alone. There are plenty of doctors. There's a movement of doctors against this. People need to go to the website jointhewedge.com. They need to go to MedRetreat, to MediBid, to, my gosh, go to my website, drlanergeorge.com, and look at the lengths of the different options out there to avoid this system that I'm speaking about. There's an answer to this, and that is free market medicine, where you go outside of this system. This system is an artificially rationed system that takes abundance in choices of care, choices of physicians, choices of medications. Everything is just centrally controlled and planned to decide who gets the services. And it is trying to take over and become the only game in town. That's what single payer really means. It means a complete destruction of your freedom to choose. You have to take what you're given. You have to like what you're given. And you can't look at anybody else because, like the people who decided, hey, I can afford to opt out of this system. You don't get to use what they're using. And that means Congress. That means the people who wrote this law, the rules, the regulations. They're not in this system. They can do what they want. They can go to Sloan Kettering or Mayo Clinic if they get a cancer diagnosis. But you can't. As an Obamacare patient, you're not allowed in these hospitals because they don't take that insurance. So the standard of care, the treatment options, they're taken from you. And here's another example of, everybody talks about how awesome socialized medicine is. Let's look at Canada for a second. There's an article that came out of a gentleman who talked about his wife, who was diagnosed with kidney cancer, who was treated in the hospital, had a response, good response to the medication. But when she was discharged from the hospital, the government no longer covered that medication. It was an oral chemotherapy drug. So they would only cover it in hospital, but not out of hospital. So she lost her care, and she ended up dying. And his lament was that Canada is the only country of those in socialized, who offer socialized medicine, that only covers medication, cancer medication in this case, in hospital, but not outside of hospital. What kind of ridiculousness is that? So they're rationing their care in a different way. As long as you're admitted and you're under that umbrella, you're great. But as soon as you have to leave it, everything stops. So be careful what you wish for. If you want to have a single-payer socialized system and you're using Sweden, UK, Canada, as your examples of how awesome it is, be aware that Sweden is now going, has privatized a portion of its healthcare system because it's unsustainable. The system in the United Kingdom is going bankrupt, and they're rationing care. They can't even afford to pay their physicians there. So this system is ridiculous. It's rigged to fail. As soon as you run out of other people's money, the system stops. And we're rushing headlong into a system like this, and it's ridiculous. But just remember, you can't get something for nothing. Every time they promise you it's going to be great, but you don't have to pay for it, you should be suspicious, because you end up not getting what you thought you were going to get. Ask the folks you thought they were going to get a $2,000 decrease in their cost under Obamacare. They're not talking about raising premiums 50, 60% during this coming open enrollment season. I'm sure that those who thought that now that I have an Affordable Care Act, I'm good to go, didn't realize that if you get a better job, if you pay more money, if you get paid more money, you lose your subsidy, but you also have to pay back the subsidy you got that previous year. So it's not a gift. It's tax. It's a loan. They're going to garnish your tax return to make their money back. This is how the system works. This is how they suck you in, by promising you things that they're never going to deliver, while demonizing people who are actually producing something. You know? Rigging the system so the cronies make more money. Demonizing people who are on the front line, making innovations that are changing the delivery of healthcare. Having cash-only practices where you know what you're dealing with up front. And I'm proud to say that Peachtree ENT Center is going to be rolling out Peachtree Wellness Cooperative website within the next coming days, weeks, which will give the price list of everything that I offer online, so you know exactly what you are dealing with when you walk into my office. And I'm also proud to say in the next coming weeks and months, I will be a third-party free practice, and I will no longer play these games with the insurance company. I can't afford to. I can't afford to stay open. I can't afford to take care of my patients. And I can't afford the hassle, the anxiety of dealing with this any longer. That's what it's coming down to. It's about choice. Choice for the individual. Choice for doctors and patients. Choice about this election. Because once you understand that this is what you're looking at down the road with a Democratic elected government, this is just the beginning. We're looking at what they're looking at in Canada, in the UK, in Sweden. It's not going to be free medicine, free healthcare, free education. It's not going to be any of that stuff. It's going to be them deciding who wins and who loses, and you're going to have to pay for your own demise, essentially. And when you pay into the system and you really need it down the road, they're going to deny you care because you've lived too long and you're costing the system too much money. They've already told you what they're going to do. And the fact that they finally admitted it was probably the best thing. I mean, to see Bill Clinton get on, on Monday, and pronounce how awful Obamacare was for the middle class because it's making them work harder, you know, 60-hour work weeks and so, and being taxed and getting nothing. Yeah, we knew that. Finally, you're admitting that's exactly what the system is. And for them to say, well, we'll fix it by putting people in Medicaid or Medicare, that's going to fix the whole problem. I just told you for the last hour how that's not going to fix the problem. It puts you in a rigid grid where your choices will be gone, where if they had their way, they would get rid of the free market altogether, give you no option, and it becomes the only game in town. And you say, how could that possibly happen? Well, let me tell you what they would like to do to the doctors. They would like to, if they have their way, make a national physician license so that once you credential in one state, it carries on through the rest of the states. And once they figure out or pronounce what you need to be licensed, I can guarantee you, you're going to have to take Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid. You won't be able to charge anything or charge people out of pocket for cash-paying patients, which is what Hillary Care always was. You weren't allowed to see patients as a private patient, charge them a cash amount. It had to be under the government insurance plan or the commercial insurance plan, which is essentially administered by the government. That's Hillary Care. And that means you have single payer, where all doctors are conscripted into a system that, in order to work, you have to do what they want you to do. And I just described what that eventually will mean. That's how they're going to get us. You do a little at a time. You have a little change in regulation. You kind of ease the person into it, like boiling a frog slowly. Same position that we're in right now. And while they're making people hate somebody for working hard, playing the game, sacrificing, like they're the evil person, they're going to do what they do, what they always do. Take control of the situation. Take control of 1/6 of the economy. Take control of your healthcare choices. And every time you, even though you play the game and do everything you're supposed to do, when you really need them, they're going to pull the rug and tell you, well, what you want is too much. You're taking it from somebody else. And you should be happy to die because that's what you should do. Take one for the team. I'm not taking one for the team. And anybody who's listening to this show, I challenge you to do your own due diligence. Go online. Go to Facebook.com. I have Peachtree ENT Center, Medicine on Call, and read the articles that I put on there. Do your own due diligence, and you'll find out. You'll see that this is not what it's cracked up to be. No, elections have choices. Elections have ramifications, and you have choices. Use them wisely. On that note, thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.